Like that whole section is nothing but.
Yeah, and then there's that going on.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jeremy Scott from CinemaSins.
Bong!
And from Music Video Sins, Barrett Scher.
Hey!
This is version two. Actually, we're not doing the same thing that we were going to do, which is annoying because we were in the middle of the Keanu Reeves filmography, but technology happened.
Or didn't happen
to that podcast. So now we're gonna just do a regular thing, and I'm sure we'll finish the Keanu Reeves thing at some other point in time. But after you've done one, you don't want to do another one and try to feign excitement over it. So we're gonna do a basic ass show today. And we're going to leave you hanging on Keanu Reeves 2000 to present.
But this will be fun too. This will be a lot of fun. We're going to have fun.
No, for sure. Like, you know, like people picking up the podcast a year from now, they're going to have the Keanu Reeves volume two. Probably.
It'll be next year before we get to part two.
Yeah. And they won't even know. They won't even know something happened unless they listen to this episode. Aside from being mad at technology, what are you guys angry about today?
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
I'm as mad as hell.
You've never seen me very upset.
I feel like we've had enough time to build up anger at things, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you got?
What do I have?
Yeah.
God, there's so much. There's so much that's made me angry recently. The death of Chadwick Boseman itself makes me angry just because he was in his prime. The reaction that some, especially media outlets, had was really going to be my primary rant. But I'm consumed and curious and a little weirded out by a new movie that's coming out on Showtime, CBS Access, Amazon, whatever the fuck is all these streaming services are incestuous. Mm-hmm. It's called The Comey Rule.
Oh, I saw that trailer.
Yeah, if you've been following the world in the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years or so, before coronavirus, before COVID-19, there was this big kerfuffle about not only James Comey, the former director of the FBI, but his book that he was releasing, which didn't contribute, but partly was factored into the impeachment proceedings, which were recommended by, or in a sideways way, by the Mueller report. All of this is very, very murky. And that's part of my problem with this. So Showtime gets people together to reenact mostly the parts of the book from James Comey's memoir about this period of time where he served under President Trump. I still have not gotten used to saying that. And so you get Jeff Daniels playing James Comey. Weird casting because Comey's like 6'8 or something like that and terribly thin, but whatever. Jeff Daniels, amazing actor. You have Brendan Gleeson playing Donald Trump, which is a little odd too. You have Holly Hunter playing Sally Yates, Michael Kelly, Andrew McCabe, all these politicians and diplomats that you've heard of recently. Scoop McNairy playing Rod Rosenstein. Jonathan Banks, Mike Ehrmantraut from Breaking Bad, is playing James Clapper. Yeah, Stephen Pasquale. Like, there's just amazing. There's one, Yorma Taccone, I think, is playing somebody. Oh, no, it's Joe Lo Trulio is playing Jeff Sessions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's perfect.
And T.R. Knight from Grey's Anatomy fame is playing Reince Priebus. From what I understand, these, besides the Trump, which I'll come back to in a second, these are very much impressions. These are very much SNL, like, I'm going to do the voice of Rod Rosenstein, or mm-hmm. I'm going to do the voice of Barack Obama or Jeff Sessions or whatever. From the reviews that I've read, Brendan Gleeson plays a wonderful Donald Trump, meaning that let me state that in a different way. He has a wonderful performance of Donald Trump. I hear that Jeff Daniels has a wonderful performance of James Comey. My question is, maybe you guys know the answer to this. My question is, why are you doing this now? Are you trying to get it in before the election? Are you trying to have some sort of, because it does kind of lean one way partisan wise, even though Comey famously kind of screwed the pooch with the Hillary Clinton email situation, or the DNC email situation right before the election. What is the purpose of this? Why get such A-list talent to agree to something that we're really still kind of in the middle of? Do you guys understand this? I mean, is it just a money grab? Is it just as simple as that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, sure. It's capitalizing on the fact that this story they think may not be worth doing after the election.
Mm.
Capitalize on it when you can. It's kind of like when they got Benedict Cumberbatch to do the Julian Assange thing. Like before really we know too much about the person at all. I feel like we were talking about this during our interview for Robin's Wish. I know that this is a completely different aside, but like all we knew about Robin Williams was that, you know, when that story first came up, was people were like, wow, he committed suicide. Why is that? And everybody came up with all these reasons for it. And we find out, you know, much, much later that he's got Lewy body dementia. And like, you know, that story about that doesn't come out until way later. And when we're not even interested anymore, or like when it, yeah. That sounds bad, but I'm just saying when we're done talking about it is
when your attention has moved on, just as human nature,
nobody gets the real story on these things until much later. If you ever look at any sort of incident in history, go back and look, go look at what like a Wikipedia, I know Wikipedia is not the best or anything, but go back and look at a Wikipedia entry for something that big that happened back in the day and look at all the stuff that has been discovered since that incident happened. It's insane. Like, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know this happened. Holy crap. When was this a story? Like, that's a big story. But we were already done talking about it in the cycle. So like nobody got that really, except some news outlets that never got their story picked up. So like this James Comey thing and all that, we're not going to know really what happened with any of that until years later, probably. There are stories that have good information about what happened, but like we're not going to know for sure until much later. So I don't like the idea of coming out with something like this so soon after it happened either. I think they are capitalizing on it though. It's kind of, they made 9/11 movies 5 years after it happened. And
that's true. They did that Sully movie, like what, 2 years after that happened?
Yeah. Yeah. So like 5 years may have been enough time, but I think it was probably still too soon even after that. But you know, these movies would benefit by having more information at their fingertips. They would be way better way better entertainment to know what actually happened. So
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, if initially I guess you're going to get the salacious factor, but it's likely you won't be rewatching these movies again, especially if there's a ton of misinformation about what actually happened, you know?
Yeah. I mean, these are not going to be very accurate. Maybe they will be, but I think still there needs to be some time before you do it. Maybe a lot of this is true, but we don't know until, you know, much later.
Yeah, well, it could be something like, well, Game Change, I think, was pretty soon after the election, right?
Yes.
And that one seems like it held up pretty well. But also, there was a lot less furtiveness with both campaigns, I think. Sarah Palin was many things, but certainly not like a secret keeper. Neither was John McCain or Barack Obama at that point. So, who knows? Who knows? I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of all this stuff coming out right now.
I mean, of course, someone might say, well, then what is the best time? Do you have to wait 10 years? There have been plenty of movies that have come out 30 years after something happened, and there's been new information that has come to light in some of those things. So some people might say, well, anytime you start is fine, as long as you have just enough basis to make any kind of story out of it. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're 100% accurate, you know?
Yeah.
So I can see both arguments.
Fuck it.
Yeah, fuck it.
That's my final word.
So I was going to rant about Kanye telling Nick Cannon that God told him to go up on stage and interrupt Taylor Swift's awards speech.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the energy to rant about Kanye anymore. Somebody fucking put him in a hospital, get him some drugs.
Yeah.
He's doing damage. What I decided to rant about is fresh from last night's experience. I'm watching a little Birds of Prey on HBO, which I had never seen. You guys seen Birds of Prey?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A couple times.
And I notice, particularly with Harley, the fight choreography is pretty good. And especially the editing, where there are lots of long takes, even if they're faked. And I happen to tweet out, Birds of Prey has better fight choreography and editing than most of the MCU.
Oh, my.
This is by far the most divisive thing I have ever tweeted in my life. And I have had nothing but massive support or massive opposition, nothing in between.
Why would you do this to yourself?
I think it's true.
I agree.
I think empirically it's true.
Okay. So a lot of people, at least four people, I don't want to call these people out if they're listeners to the show. So I'm not ranting about you particularly. I'm going to make this a bigger rant about dropping videos as a response in a short text chat conversation. Twitter limits me to whatever, 240 characters. I'm talking with words, right? And I say this, if you disagree, tell me why you disagree. Apparently, the Corridor crew, which I think is related to Corridor Digital.
Yes, it is.
One of their recurring series is real stuntmen break down good and bad movie stunts. And they have a video where they point out some not so great choreography and stunt work in Birds of Prey. And this is a long ass video. And it's like being dropped here. Like listen, I don't respect you enough to stop and go watch an 8-minute video that is your current rebuttal to me. If you can't put your rebuttal in one or two tweets in this format, fuck off with your video drops, because you also forget the same people have made videos pointing out bad stunts in MCU movies.
Yep.
You just cherry picked the one that fit this argument. And this is why I hate this kind of thing. And listen, people do this in movie discussions with our fucking videos where somebody will say, oh, I love Prometheus, and somebody will drop the Sins video in there as though that's an actual argument. And it's not. Use words, people. I was really annoyed. I was tickled by the general reaction. I was annoyed that a few people seemed to think, here is a video link. This is all the evidence you need. I see people do it about us with one of the videos that people have made calling us idiots or whatever. One of the anti-CinemaSins videos. I'll see somebody like, I won't say his name, but a Twitter friend the other day said he really loves CinemaSins. Three different people came underneath him and just dropped the same anti-CinemaSins video as though, oh, yes, please let me go watch a 20-minute rant that
you totally changed my mind.
My one sentence. And just don't do that, people. If you actually want to have discourse, I recognize 90% of Twitter does not. And a lot of people are just trolling or making a point and moving on. But if you actually want to have a conversation, don't drop videos in the middle of a text chat as some kind of evidence. It's a completely different medium. If we're talking long form over email, maybe send me a video, but maybe send me three or four so you've got more than one source.
This is an issue with arguments as a whole on Twitter. It's obviously not just movies. Yes, the video thing is certainly a big problem, but so is someone coming on and saying, oh, that would be great if you weren't so wrong. Yeah. And then that's it.
Yeah.
And like the problem, I see it. I understand that, you know, the Twitter has a limit and everything, but I've always felt like if you're going to refute something, you should be able to explain why the thing that you said is wrong is wrong. You should be able to say like, well, look here, like, take this scene for example, or whatever. If you have to thread it, go ahead and thread it, and go ahead and refute it that way. But don't, yeah. You know, the whole point of you put, yeah, like you said, put a video there, and that's the number one thing that people don't understand about the video thing that you just said about the, how Corridor Digital has also looked at the Marvels stuff and have said, hey, this is bad too. They haven't, I don't think there's any one video that says, well, this is better than the other. They're just pointing out bad stuff.
Yeah. In fact, all the titles say good and bad stunts in Hollywood movies. Every single video about this says they point out good and bad stunts.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, that's the thing. I usually know not to pay much attention to a tweet that says something like that, or just drops a video and considers that the mic drop that they were looking for.
I mean, I think it goes for even really good content. I love CGP Grey, right? Or CPG Grey, however you fucking say it.
Yeah,
I love watching that channel. He's really bright. I would never, in a conversation about gravity, go find a CGP Grey video and drop it in and say, watch this. This is all the proof you need.
Yeah.
Because I don't think even he would say, I am the only source you need about any one of these videos. And this goes even further. God, I'm getting off the rails. This goes even further than just arguments online, but this goes for like news, right? Like I preach to everybody I know, if you're a conservative and you love Fox News, that's great. But could you please add two or three other sources to get a well-rounded picture? Because I take a peek at what Fox News says, even though my politics don't necessarily line up. I look at what CNN says and Reuters, fucking, I'll look at everything as much as I can to get a well-rounded picture of the closest proximity to the truth, rather than just taking one single source on any one subject.
Yeah,
do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Not got it.
No, I totally agree with you. That is a rant that needed to happen for sure. Because I hate that stuff too. And you know, I don't know. I just keep wanting to harp on the fact that there's more to your information than just the video. That you know exactly what you were talking about. Just the fact that that's not anything that says Birds of Prey is worse than Marvel movies. And even if it did, tell me why. Give me a good reason.
I also have noticed, I watched a few of those videos, and sometimes they have the actual stunt people from the movie they're talking about.
Yeah.
And as would be natural in human nature, they don't often rip on that movie.
Right.
And while that guy's sitting there on the couch saying, that's me doing that stunt.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas sometimes it's that the stunt people are not the ones that were involved in the movie. And I'm not saying there's anything. Those guys are awesome. Go sub to that channel. I've always liked those guys.
Yeah, Corridor Digital is awesome.
No one video can sum up any one topic.
Yeah, Corridor Digital did some cool stuff with like making the Scorpion King better, the special effects.
Oh, those are the same guys. Are they the ones that did the violent Home Alone?
Did the violent Home Alone?
Yeah,
R-rated. Yeah. They're really good. We're staying in movies today because I'm gonna rant about Tenet for a little bit. Now I like the movie. I'm gonna have to watch it 100 more times before I understand it, but
this is what I hear.
Yeah. I after I watched it, I wrote to everybody in the gang and said, this is a movie that has the actual number of times you're gonna have to watch this movie forward and backward to understand it. Has that in the title. It's Tenet. and so I didn't realize that this was a thing that was a massive point of discussion about this film until this morning. Christopher Nolan movies, by and large, we've known this forever. The dialogue track is hard to hear. It's constantly being muffled by either masks or it is, there is a lot of ambient noise in the scene that sort of drones over the, it's either ambient noise or the sound or the score itself, which is always like some sort of constant or whatever. And so, so people were talking like this through the movie and it's always like, and you're just like, oh shit. This is a really complex movie, guys. I don't know if I understood exactly what they're supposed to be doing here, where they're going or anything. And so like I looked up this morning, there's several articles about this. And you know, the one thing that I was reading in these articles was that, well, he's won these Oscars. His movies have won Oscars for sound and everything. And like, I just don't feel like an Oscar means, you know, like, do they look for stuff like I could hear the dialogue clearly, or do they hear, or do people who award Oscars go, oh man, what they did with the sound was amazing. I don't know if they look for stuff like that. And because certainly Nolan movies cannot be getting Oscars for clarity of dialogue. I don't know what the basis is for the Oscars. I can say that I can see a movie winning an Oscar for sound, but still having bad elements of sound. Like you could have done all sorts of cool stuff with the design and you just may not have been able to hear dialogue the whole time.
Well, that's the case with Dunkirk for sure, right?
Yes.
Because luckily there's not a lot of dialogue with that, but the score is so unsettling and the pops of the gunshots and all that stuff. The one thing that you can't hear is the talking.
It started
the dialogue
for me with Interstellar. That was the first time it was really distracting for me. I think going back to some of his previous work, I can find times where you can see the ancestors of this type of sound design in his earlier movies. But
well, Dark Knight Rises was the thing because the trailer itself had Nolan scrambling back to make sure that people could hear at all
what Tom Hardy was saying.
Yeah. I don't understand the defense of it though. That's what I'm saying. If you can't hear things, and that's a problem for everybody, and I guess that's for the youngs and the olds who are watching this movie, then there's got to be a problem. And I saw this one sound designer say something like, you know, you go back to Star Wars and Apocalypse Now and all these movies, you could hear everything everybody's saying pretty easily. But they've done this. There was one discussion that said the reason why movies these days have a dialogue problem is that TV started getting better and and movies needed to do something to distinguish themselves. So there was all this different sound atmosphere type stuff that was going on that they started doing and to make things seem so much better in a theater. But what they're doing is they're shortchanging dialogue. And for a movie like Tenet, which is confusing as fuck, you know, you're talking about time travel, you're talking about paradoxes, you're talking about all this. Then you throw a big complex Christopher Nolan plot into the middle of all of that. You're not only like trying to figure out how the world works, but you're also trying to figure out what the purpose of them doing the things that they're doing on the screen is. So like it's hard a lot of times. And it's tough for a movie like Tenet, which I can tell you, even though I didn't hear everything and I didn't know anything, I didn't know what 30% of this movie was about, I was still like, oh, I'm really enjoying myself, but my God.
Hey, this is cool. I have no idea what's going on.
Hey, visually, you can't beat it, man. There's a lot of cool shit in the movie. But this defense of the dialogue thing and like just because the guy's won Oscars and shit, I mean, that's a petty defense. That's the drop in the video on Twitter of defending, people's, movie making habits or whatever. That's the, he won Oscars, case closed, you know? So, that's what I want to rant about today. I think that we live in a day and age where I should be able to not only hear the ambient noise that you want to put in this thing that makes the atmosphere all crackle and pop and everything. You should be able to hear somebody pretty clearly say, we need to do this to do that and do the other thing. And then you have an idea of what the fuck's going on. So
you got a great point. I mean, in the Prestige, it's a little bit difficult for us gringos because everything, especially Christian Bale's accent, is so pronounced. In that North London, very specific. I don't think it's Cockney. I think it's just like very, very specific to that region.
Mm-hmm.
But like even Dark Knight and Batman Begins, you've got when Bale puts on the bad voice, he's going to talk like this, and it'll get muddled. Like even though you can hear it, and especially in the theater, you can hear it pop a lot more than you can in home video. Heath Ledger was great because he over enunciated. That was kind of his character. But the bad voice is just like this. So yeah, you're right. It gets just overwhelming. There's no real reason for it. You said, Jeremy, Interstellar is kind of like this. I don't remember Interstellar.
Hell yeah. Especially the last third. It's just that it's as much noise as there is music in that score. And it really drowns out. I haven't seen Interstellar in probably 6 months, but it really drowns out some of that dialogue with him and Anne Hathaway, especially him and the robots.
Oh, yeah, toward the end.
That whole spot when Matt Damon takes the ship and flies out of the planet.
Yeah.
That whole area from the point that he flies out to the end of that whole sequence is impossible. And then the afterwards where Matthew McConaughey is telling Anne Hathaway what he's going to do. And he's tricking her because he's sending her to the other planet and he's going to the black hole. All of that, like that whole section is nothing but
And then there's that going on.
Cause you not only add the fact that you can't hear the dialogue anyway, but you add like radio transmission sound to it and everything. So like, it's impossible to hear even, cause that's a more distinct and more coverable sound by score and soundtrack and everything. So, Interstellar is a definite, violator of that.
Interesting.
All right, everybody, it's time to talk about Mubi.
Yeah.
Once again. I tell you what, on Mubi right now, there's a movie from Chan-wook Park called Joint Security Area. Chan-wook Park did Old Boy. He did The Handmaiden. These are great movies. This one I had never heard of before. It does have one actor that you're probably familiar with. It's Song Kang-ho, who is the older father guy in Parasite. He's in all the Bong Joon-ho movies. He's in Snowpiercer. He is in this. But basically the story about joint security area is that it's North Korea and South Korea. It's the area where North Korea and South Korea sort of like it's on the border. And there is a killing that happens on the North Korean side. And it's a South Korean that definitely did it. And so the Korean authorities have said, we need somebody neutral to come in and solve this case. But the neutral parties are basically instructed not to like start a wildfire with their investigation. They have to be very neutral, very, very neutral, more neutral, like and neutral to the point of not even like, reporting actually what happened. It seems like, the main investigator, and I don't know how to pronounce the name, but it's Lee Yong A or Yong A Lee is the woman that they send from a, it's a Swiss slash Swedish contingent that comes in to investigate this, and they start solving the case. And just as they're about to get to the end of the case, the movie flashes back to how we got here. And it's this story about the South Korean guy finding himself in the North Korean side. And I'll leave it at there because there's a lot of things to discover about this movie. It's really, really good. It is often very funny in moments, very well acted. It's a perfect type of movie to join MUBI with. I'm sure that the Korean version of this title, Joint Security Area, is not something that sounds exciting, but it is. It's very good. It's a good mystery. It's a, you know, it's got a lot of layers to it. I highly recommend watching this.
For sure. So this is in the DMZ, the Demilitarized Zone, right?
Yeah, although they never say DMZ in this. Huh. I'm assuming it is, just for the record. I'm assuming that's what that's called. But it's an area where, like, you know, you have both patrols sitting there, and they're always, like, on alert that there might be an attack. They're
literally face-to-face, right?
Yeah. So, and this was back in 2000. So who knows what rules have changed back and forth, whatever.
Things are so much better now.
Yeah, you're right. this was the Kim Jong-il era. Of North Korea. But highly, highly good and worth getting the service for.
Nice. Get some MUBI for that.
Yeah.
You can also get MUBI. I want to talk about buttholes.
Okay.
So there's a feature on here that's called the Blue Flower of Novalis, which is a Brazilian movie that has a very different title in Portuguese. But it's a cinema verite thing about this quote audaciously bawdy queer poet Marcelo Diorio. Mm. And when I talk about buttholes, he is not a butthole, but he has one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's featured prominently in this movie. It opens on a close-up of his butthole.
Uh-huh.
And there's a reason for it. There's not just extraneous buttholes, just like, you know, littering the screen.
It kind of sounds like this.
there's just the one butthole. But there's a reason for it. And the guy contemplates, you know, death and life and sex and incest and weird stuff that's happened to him in the past, his family, things like that. And I'm going to recommend two very experimental features here. And this is one of them. Like, it's just the guy is a, you know, you meet like a Hunter S. Thompson, or you not meet, but like you see a Hunter S. Thompson or a American Splinter, Harvey Pekar, or Crispin Glover, or Chloe Sevigny to a certain degree, like just one of a kind people, Andy Warhol, like kind of Andy Kaufman. This is that type of guy where you're like, you're never going to be able to figure this guy out. You just want to sit back and listen to him. And it's hilarious. It's poignant at times. And there are some buttholes, but the buttholes stand a purpose.
Yeah. Okay.
So yes,
there you go.
This is a recommend. The other one that I watched was a very strange film, a French film, French slash South Korean film called Isadora's Children.
Mm.
This is about a woman, a choreographer named Isadora Duncan, who lived in the early 1900s. Man, this movie. It's an exercise in patience.
Ah.
Meaning that there's three vignettes, essentially. The first one, about 20, 25 minutes or more, has no dialogue to speak of. And it's just this woman, this beautiful ballerina, practicing to do this number, this choreographed number from Isadora Duncan, which is about the death of her three kids. And I have to admit, at the beginning, I'm like, God damn, seriously? Why am I watching? It's almost Tai Chi, the way she's moving. It's not, you know, big nutcracker ballerina stuff. It's very slow and methodical movements. And the more I watched this movie, the more it became meditative and became more reflective. And it became less of like my American tendency to be like, do something, mm-hmm. which I do often, and more of, this is beautiful for what it is, and I really should be appreciating this. And it's filmed beautifully. Damian Manival shot this, and sometimes you need movies like this to reflect more on the beauty of things and the internal strife of things rather than bang, bang, shoot 'em up type of stuff, mm-hmm. which I also love.
Yeah.
But that was Isadora's Children is very interesting. It's not your typical movie, nor is the one with the buttholes, but like this is what that's a terrible lead into. This is what really you get is. From movie. Movie gives you a chance to experience all kinds of quote crazy stuff from all over the world, Brazil, India, France, South Korea. I mean, it's just and America. They've got a 30-day lineup. Each day, a new movie is added to this 30-day thing. And then they have this ginormous library full of all kinds of stuff that's been on the service before. Some other films that have been curated and kind of sorted into subcategories. You're going to love this. You need a new streaming service, people. You need it. You need it in your life. Mm. You need it in your mouth. Mm. You need it in your body. Mm. Go to Mubi.com, MUBI.com/CinemaSins. You get 30 days free. If you didn't understand that, it's 30 days free. 30 days of no cost, and you're going to love it. You're going to experience all this cinema that you've never experienced before, and gosh darn it, you're going to love it. And you've heard us talk about it before. Do it now. Now.
Okay, so you guys got some recommends and warns?
Totes amaze balls.
They're great.
It won the Academy Award.
Oh, for what?
For best movie ever made.
Yeah.
I think we do.
Okay, so in the past week or so, I've gotten a chance to watch a lot of like cool shit that I hadn't seen. There's a movie called Tampopo that came out in 1985. Tampopo is the name of the main character in the movie, and she wants to make the best ramen noodles in her town that she can possibly make. Her husband has recently died, and she is serving to a cafe of I guess uncritical eaters, because she kind of packs this place up pretty decently with some regulars, but she one day somebody walks in and they're not complimentary of the noodles at all. And the two people who become part of the main part of this movie break it down to her and say, yeah, your ramen noodles are not very good. I mean, we didn't want to say much or anything. It's just that if you want to be the best, this isn't it. And so they help her in all sorts of phases. This is what I love. I love stuff like this in movies. The main two guys, I can't remember the one guy's name, but Ken Watanabe, young Ken Watanabe is in.
Oh, wow. You said 1985?
Didn't even know it was him the entire time I watched this movie.
Huh.
They're the two that sort of help, but the other guy who's not Ken Watanabe, is the one who's like teaching her like how she should listen to orders and remind and remember the orders if she's got like a bunch of them at the same time and everything, and how to run a restaurant and all these things. And meanwhile, there's a whole like thing where she's going into other noodle shops and trying to figure out how they make the best broth and how they make the best noodles and how they make the best pork. And all these different aspects of it. So she's basically spying on everybody else, taking the best from everything that she can, and trying to make the absolute best that anybody's eaten. The movie has all sorts of like different vignettes in it, because that's not the only story. Aside from Tampopo, there's a gangster and his like girlfriend that they just kind of randomly show. This has nothing to do with the main plot at all. There's like there's a scene at the very beginning, and this is the scene that'll get you really into it. There's a guy teaching Ken Watanabe how to enjoy ramen noodles. He's like, here's the bowl, and like, here's what you need to do. You need to make sure that you like you put the beef down into the broth just so, and you need to observe the beef and give it respect and stuff like that, and then you need to do this and that, and it's like wow, really interesting. I would have never thought to do this with ramen noodles and everything, but. It's the type of stuff that'll make you super hungry when you watch it. The movie is borderline absurd sometimes, but it's hilarious. The main actress playing Tampopo is awesome in it. She's so good. You'll fall in love with her. I really, really enjoyed it. So, that's my recommend.
Excellent.
Huh. Ramen's a big deal, man. Mm-hmm. I told you when I was living with a Japanese guy in the first month of Chicago, he would take me around to all these Japanese spots in the city and meeting his friends and everything. And when they do like a Japanese feast, there's like a salad course, and then there's like a seafood course, and then there's a beef course, and then there's a rice course. Then like there's another course in between that, and you're stuffed. All of a sudden, an enormous bowl of ramen comes out. And you're like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my buddy is like 135 pounds soaking wet. It's just like, oh, yeah, time for ramen. And he's just like, you know, slurping it and all that stuff. I'm like, God, how do you do this? Then it's dessert time and green tea time. I can imagine that the process to get the broth correct is like stuff of legends, stuff that we've talked about in Jiro Dreams of Sushi and things like that.
Yeah.
The simplest thing takes the longest to get perfect. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to watch this. This is going to be a good one.
There's just like little cool, there's really cool scenes in this where like she and the other dude go to another ramen noodle place, and they stand behind this one guy who's running this shop that's got tons of people in it, and there's all these people who are just randomly giving their orders. They're not even waiting for the guy to say, hey, what's your order? They're just like, ramen, pork, or whatever, and they're like, okay. And so like all this stuff happens, and the guy's like, okay, so what are the orders? It's like, the orders are this, and he starts going through the whole thing, like what he heard. And she goes, no, that's not right. Like she corrects him, and nice. And everybody starts clapping and everything. There's just one random spot where like a woman is teaching all these other women like manners when they're eating. That's a vignette that's in this movie. They're like, you know, when you eat, don't make any noise. Don't slurp too loud. You go blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, while she's trying to teach this lesson, there's a dude in another part of the restaurant who's just like,
It's encouraged. It's encouraged. Slurp him.
Yeah, and at the end of it, everybody's just like, okay, that's what we're gonna do, and everybody is slurping up the ramen noodles and everything. So it's a movie that doesn't take itself seriously, but it's got a nice heartwarming story to it, and everybody's good in it, and it's great.
Nice.
All right. All right. I'm gonna recommend stand up comedy stylings of Mike Birbiglia.
Yeah.
I have been finding them on Netflix. There are at least three or four, maybe more. Mm-hmm. My wife and I enjoy stand-up comedy. That's one thing we can almost consistently have the same tastes in. I had heard his name, but I didn't know anything about him. Mm-hmm. And so we watched one of his specials, and this was the one all about not wanting to have kids. I appreciate his comedy because it's very unique in that it's autobiographical. Most of what he's doing is telling stories. And the way that he is funny is the pauses he tells in stories, or the way he twists the story when you're not expecting it. And sometimes he whispers.
All the time. Yes, yep. He's so quiet.
And sometimes he like tells a joke and the audience is kind of chuckling. and he grins, and you can tell he's loving this moment. He has twice that I've seen gone out into the audience to interact with people, and he's very funny at that.
But that part in Thank God for Jokes where he goes down and talks to the guy that's like, what crime were you arrested for?
Arrested by a woman cop? Like,
yeah, a woman cop put me in a headlock. He's like, whoa, woman cop? Where did this come from?
He just can they vote?
Yeah. Can they vote?
He's very, very, very funny. And we're going to watch the rest of it. The second special we watched was actually before he had married. Actually, no, that's the third one we watched. The second one we watched was Thank God for Jokes, where he tells this hilarious story about about going to an awards ceremony and being like the host, mm-hmm. where David O. Russell is going to win like some kind of lifetime achievement award, and he basically just reads the David O. Russell rant from that viral I Heart Huckabees video. And David O. Russell gets up and storms out. It's a hilarious story, and the entire act is leading to, he sets it up from the beginning and then keeps going back and telling stories that lead up to this event. And one of them, he mentions something about, it's a commentary on police shootings. And he says, you know, if a bear killed me, everybody would be angry at the bear. There wouldn't be any doubt. There wouldn't be a press conference the next day with all the bears lined up and the boss bear walking forward saying, he's usually a pretty good bear. He does these funny voices. Every time he does a funny voice, I cry laughing. They're not even good voices. He does a bit about the Muppets where he does an animal quote, like, what if the Muppets cussed? And his animal is not even a good impression, but he goes, this fucking snare drum sounds like shit. And it's just every time he does it. Anyway, then we watched a third one recently from before he ever got married, and it's all about not wanting to get married and telling stories about courting his now wife. And so I've seen three of them. And they're all laugh out loud funny. And if you like stand-up comedy and you haven't given them a shot, please do so post-haste.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to see him at Zany's about 10 years ago.
That's awesome. Nice. So that probably was before any of this, like before he was married or any, because the stories he tells about courting this woman, he's an on-the-road stand-up comic like five nights a week. So
yeah, he was much like Patton Oswalt, was very anti-marriage, anti-kid.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you fall in love with that woman, you know, you're gonna make them happy, right?
Yeah.
But that one before he's married, that may have been the one, because he tells the story about how he cheated on his did you ever see that one?
No, this one's called My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, and it's all about stories where his various girlfriends also had other boyfriends at the same
time. There's an earlier one where he tells this story about how he cheated on the woman that he really was in love with. And he said that, you know, he was a good guy. You know, he never did this type of stuff, and he was just starting to get some recognition as a stand-up comic. And this one woman comes up to him after a show, and then, you know, and he goes, yeah, and then I cheated on my girlfriend. And everybody's like, oh, and he goes, I know, I'm in the future too. there's an art to stand up comedy. A lot of people, you know, I don't think very many people can do this, where, you know, you're talking about that whisper thing. Getting people engaged in your stories and everything, that is a technique that somebody like him, and I hate to say Bill Cosby, used to do as well in his stand-up comedy. Like, there's a way of engaging the audience where you're not necessarily being funny all the time. Dave Chappelle does this. Where you're telling the story, and a lot of times this goes on for 5 minutes and you're like, is this going to end up in a joke? But you're also just compelled. So a lot of times the stand-up comics forget about the storytelling aspect of the art form. So he's great. Yeah, I love him.
That David O. Russell thing is so great on so many levels. Like you say, he's telling a story about when he's writing the joke on the airplane, and then he's telling a joke about what happens. And I'm not going to give away a punchline or anything, but the fact that
Like he tells the joke or he tells the thing, and David O. Russell gets up and walks out, and the publicist or the whoever it was running the show is like, I need to go after him. Will you go after him too? And he's like, absolutely. Because A, he's going to come back and say it's no big deal and I'll be in one of his films. Or B, I'm going to be in a David O. Russell story. He's going to beat me up or do whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's so perfect. It's so great. No, I love that that special. I love him.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I have an oldie recommendation.
Ooh.
This is a complex one for me, and it probably shouldn't be. It's a 1999 movie starring John Cusack and Billy Bob Thornton, Angelina Jolie, and Kate Blanchett called Pushing 10.
Yeah, I remember this. Mike Newell.
Mike Newell of Goblet of Fire fame, and many others, of course,
Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Well, you don't think the Harry Potter movie is his most famous movie?
Oh, no. Sure it is.
No, it's not. Not for him directing it. No.
Well, no, not for him directing it, but it is the most famous movie he's directed.
It's the most famous movie, but it's not the famous.
Nobody knows he directed that movie.
Right. Like if you were to say Mike Newell films, you wouldn't be like, well, right off the bat, what comes to mind is the Harry Potter movie he did.
Well, it certainly wouldn't be Pushing 10. It seems like people have overlooked this movie for many years because, of course, it was 1999. It came out in April of late April. But there was a lot going on in 1999. Mm-hmm. This had John Cusack in his prime and arguably Billy Bob Thornton in his prime and Angelina Jolie in her young actor prime. Mm-hmm. Cate Blanchett is fantastic in this, too. Jeremy, have you seen this movie?
Yes.
This movie's about air traffic controllers. John Cusack and Billy Bob Thornton.
I've seen this movie three or four times. I think the movie needs to pick a lane, but I do enjoy it. It's an enjoyable watch. I wish it was either about air traffic controller rivalries and the stress of that job, or about couples who inadvertently switch partners and there's romantic drama involved.
Now, see, I see what you're saying. But I don't think it's that, I use this word a lot, bifurcated. I think it is about both. And I just recently watched it again. When I watched it the first time, this movie destroyed me. This movie has no business destroying anybody. It's a fairly lighthearted comedy. It's Cusack going kind of over the top after he'd kind of slowed it down with Gross Point Blank and all that stuff. Right before he does High Fidelity. And it's almost a farce, but it's also, I was in a tumultuous relationship at the time where we were both cheating on each other. Speaking of which, I'm in the future too. And so the fact that not only do we know that Cusack cheats on his wife with Angelina Jolie and screws his colleague in the process, which is, especially among air traffic controllers, not what you do. And the fact that Billy Bob Thornton sets in course of action, like that he thinks he may be having an affair with Cate Blanchett, who's John Cusack's wife, was very emotional to me for whatever reason. I didn't think it was fair. It made me angry. It made me sick to my stomach. Watching it now, having not cheated on my wife in at least a few weeks.
Nice.
It seems a lot more career driven. Like this is the reason he's the guy that was never beaten. He's the best. And by the way, the scenes in the air traffic control are some of the most impressive dialogue that you'll ever see. You know, Cusack can always talk fast and say anything. He's always just like quick witted and quick talking. In fact, they make fun of it in this movie. Angelina Jolie's like, what's the fewest amount of words that you can say to get out that door after she slept with him and he's leaving. But the air traffic control is like, American Airlines 150, you turn left 30 degrees, blah, blah, blah. And it's just absolutely lightning fast. And you do get what I think is an authentic taste of this lifestyle. And I think that the movie does do a decent job. It's not perfect, you're right, of overlapping those two things and the professional rivalry turning into an obsession. This is a story about Cusack's character's obsession with Billy Bob Thornton's character. So much so that Billy Bob Thornton's character has to bounce from New York City and move out to Colorado to get away from this guy. And he'll tell you that. He said, one or two things is going to happen. Either I was going to kill you, or I was going to crash a plane of Japanese, which is kind of racist, but whatever.
Yeah.
And you can tell that they've both gotten to each other. And the ending is it has been derided by Ebert and others about, like, how, you know,
it's an Adam Sandler movie ending.
Well, the very ending, I'll give you that, but how things are rosy and everything. But when he does go to see Billy Bob out in Colorado, he's like, what do I have to do to be like you? To be, let things go, to be cool, to be calm and collected. And he's like, jump in that river right there. And it's in Colorado. It's in fall. It's cold. And so he gets in a little bit. But he's like, God damn it, why didn't you jump all the way in that river? And then he's like, all right, well, I've got something else. And he's like, what? Anything is better than this river. And he's like, what is it? And he's like, you're going to wish like hell that you jumped in that river. And it's when they do the air turbulence thing when the 747 is flying over.
That was I think that's the movie where, I don't know if this is the, if this is a true rule or not, but heard that they have this rule that if an air traffic controller has a near collision incident, that they have to take however many weeks of a break. And then if it happens again, then that's, they're done.
They get three strikes, at least in the movie, and they call it deals. He's like, you had a deal. And so one happens, he gets called into the office and he's told to go home. He doesn't, he gets back on it and freezes and has another deal. Mm-hmm. And so they tell him to take a week or whatever. And he get three strikes, at least in this movie.
Yeah,
he's like, I had two deals within 30 minutes. I haven't had one in like 11 years of doing this, you know.
Yeah,
but it's an interesting movie. It's got very good character actors and leading actors, kind of in their primes, and it's an overlooked movie that I wanted to recommend.
All right, everybody, it's time to talk about BetterHelp.
BetterHelp, BetterHelp. I love BetterHelp. It is personally useful to me. And I swear to God, people, think about where you're at right now. Think about what's going on right now. Not only, I know we've all talked about how difficult things are right now, worldwide, specifically in the States, but really worldwide with the pandemic and with a lot of social justice initiatives being done, a lot of political upheaval. But think about you. Think about how this is all affecting you. You know, you watch TV, you watch the news, you browse Twitter, you browse Facebook, and you see what's going on in the world, but you don't really think about how that's affecting you. In the best of times, you can have some anxiety, some worry, some stress. Sometimes you can have some sadness. You can have some depression. You can have some difficulty sleeping. If there is something that has been bothering you, if there's something that you think could turn into a problem, a mental health issue, if it hasn't already, go to BetterHelp.com. These are licensed counselors. They are in such high demand that they're hiring more. There are thousands of them. It's an online interface. You log in from your own home. You answer a few questions, you get matched with a therapist, that therapist will contact you very shortly afterwards, and you can set up your treatment plan, you can set up what you want to work on, and you start from there. Everything is just so insular. It's not dealing with insurance. It's not dealing with a bunch of different people before you even get to your counselor. It's a wholly unique experience, especially online, especially when a lot of us are trying to distance. This is a perfect service to come along right now.
And take it seriously. Don't treat therapy like
you know, the video training at the supermarket when you got your first job, where
you
try to get a passing grade and get through.
That is that is bad therapy. There, right there.
Bad therapy. Take it seriously, because if you don't think it can matter, it's probably not going to matter. And the other second thing I would say is listen to your therapist. You know, if your therapist suggests try doing some exercise on a regular basis, don't do what I did and ignore that advice for 6 weeks before you start doing it. Do some exercise. Your therapist generally knows what they're talking about when they give you some advice. I think if you go in with a positive outlook, you may be surprised how much this kind of thing can actually help.
You're goddamn right. I swear to God, the most annoying thing, and this is an ad. I'm promoting this service. But the most annoying thing in the world, especially for three irascible assholes like us, is being told what to do. Okay. And you have to trust that your counselor has your best interest at heart. And man, my therapist, my counselor has told me what to do several times. And my immediate gut reaction is like, hey, don't tell me what to do. And then I step back and I'm like, you know what? That's why I'm here. Maybe that's part of my problem. I need to start doing this. So yes, absolutely. What Jeremy said, you have to be receptive. That's the whole point of this. That's why these people are here. This is what you need to be doing. If you're working on something, it's very, very hard to do it on your own, if not impossible. Sometimes I used to think that any of my problems could be solved pretty much by myself. It ain't the case. Okay. You have to trust your counselor. You have to trust the therapeutic relationship. You have to be willing to be told what to do at times and take that to heart. BetterHelp has a great service for it. They don't always boss you around and tell you what to do. They're empathetic and they listen and all that stuff too. So you go to BetterHelp.com, HELP.com/Sincast. That's the show that you're listening to right now, Sincast. And it'll get you 10% off your first month. That is not nothing. Especially if you use the service several times the way that it's intended to. You can talk, text, chat, do a video chat. I mean, there's just so many options. This thing is a godsend, and I really cannot recommend it enough. Go to betterhelp.com/Zencast, and I hope this reaches the people that really do need it. And if you think you don't need it, just think for a second. Just be like, hey, let me check in with myself. You know, see if you need it. And if you do, go to betterhelp.com/Sincast. Yes.
Next recommend will be Christopher Nolan's first movie called Following.
Ooh.
I've seen this movie a couple of other times in my life, but I think the last two times I watched it, I must have watched it late at night, or I was just watching it just to have... to be a completionist about Christopher Nolan movies or something, because every time this movie has come up in the past, I'm like, I cannot remember what happens in this movie. But watching it again, and this time under better circumstances, I really, really enjoyed this. And I looked into like how he made this and everything. It's a black and white 16 millimeter film he made back in 1998. It took him a year to make it. Because the cast and crew couldn't work any other day except for Saturdays.
No shit.
So he had to wait until Saturday to basically like do a scene of the movie. And even back then, Nolan was playing with narratives and time and all that. The movie goes back and forth between. It's about this guy who is, he's basically bored with everything that he's doing. He fancies himself a writer, and he starts following people around. And he uses the excuse of, I need material for my writing, but you know, you start getting the idea that this is a bunch of bullshit. He just wants to start following people around 'cause he's bored and he's got something, he's got a screw loose. He follows this one guy into a cafe, and that guy knows that he's been following him. And that guy comes up to him and says, "I know you. Why are you following me? What's going on?" And eventually, they strike up I guess, an uneasy friendship. They're not really friends in this movie. It doesn't feel like this guy is here, do what I do. I go into people's apartments and just steal really irreplaceable things. Basically, that's what his whole deal is. He'll go in and steal photographs and steal an earring, and then sometimes he'll steal the earring and put it in a different place and stuff like that. And his whole reasoning for this is, people know that they've been broken into, and they'll really assess their they'll really appreciate the things that they have in life and everything. That's his reasoning for all this. The movie goes back and forth between our main character learning this stuff and further in the future where he has done this a number of times. And the movie, you can tell where it's changed in the narrative, because he's all clean cut. His hair is all different and everything. And there's even another section of the movie that they keep going back to where he is beat up. So you have to kind of figure out where, is this before this? And and Christopher Nolan will put in little scenes where why is he coughing up a plastic glove? Why is he doing that now? And that no explanation until way later in the movie. Mm. It's just an interesting narrative, an interesting story. It's not Christopher Nolan's best movie. It's his first movie. It was made, for $7,000 or something like that.
Jesus.
But it's really interesting how it goes. And once you find out where this movie ends up, where it leads by the end of it, this is another one of those Christopher Nolan endings where you're like, oh fuck, that was pretty well done, man. That the way he set up all of that is pretty incredible. By the end of it, you're like, holy shit. There's a lot of nice surprises and everything. So Following is his first movie. I recommend it. It's been, I don't know how long ago it was that I saw it the last time, but, I recommend it.
All right. I got to get after that. Is that all just right on Blu-ray or DVD, or did you find it on one of the streaming services?
I found it on, I think it was Amazon. I may have had to rent this, but I think you can get a Criterion version of this. I'm trying to see, did I see, because Criterion is on HBO Max. A lot of Criterion is. But I don't think I saw it on that. I'm not sure. I can't remember, but yeah, look for it either on HBO Max or Amazon, one of those places. It's 70 minutes. It's a TV episode length. So, you can fit that in no problem. And it's, obviously it's best that I don't tell you everything that happens in it, 'cause it's one of those kind of movies. So,
All right.
I'm going to give y'all some really bad advice.
Okay.
Please ignore everything I'm about to say.
All right.
I'm going to warn you away from a film that won the Academy Award for Best Foreign Film.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
In the late 80s. Considered one of the most famous food movies of all time, which is why I watched it. Babette's Feast.
Oh, mm-hmm. Babette. Oui, oui.
Yeah.
I told you already, this is some bad advice. You check the internet, they're going to tell you I am wrong. They love this movie. It's a 97 in Rotten Tomatoes, for fuck's sake.
Mm-hmm.
This movie bored me to tears. This movie made Dr. Zhivago feel like an action romp.
Oh, you fucking hell.
Is
That's
slow
impossible.
As death. This movie is boring. It's two old ladies. You just get used to the old ladies, and suddenly they're young ladies, and they're dead, and they live in fucking Denmark or something. It might as well be a hill. There's five huts with thatch roofs, and that's the town. And he won't let the daughters marry any of the suitors. There's ugly guys that want to marry these girls and give them a life, and dad says no because he's a dickhead. And now we flash forward, and these two women are spinsters, and they're in their 70s, and they're old and mean. And this movie is not about food yet. At this point, you have sat through two full hymn singings at French church. I'm talking about like the Tremé. We're gonna let the whole goddamn song play, even though it's in French. Now, granted, they probably made it for French people, but last night I was the audience and I did not appreciate the two full hymns sung in French. And then Babette shows up. This is like barely, like maybe halfway through the movie, maybe like a third. Babette shows up.
Is she one of the spinsters?
She shows up to live with the spinsters. Her, I think, husband or dad says, "Oh, she's got melancholy. She needs help. Take her in.
She's got the melancholy.
She's a refugee." And they're like, "Well, we can't pay you." And she's like, "That's okay." And so for 14 years, she cooks all their meals and doesn't get anything out of it. Then she wins the lottery. Are you guys having fun yet? Because I sure was.
And how the lottery's fun.
Yes, you would think. And she finally can escape and go back to Paris, where she's from, and get back to her life without melancholy. But no, she spends all the money on making a face for these two old ladies who haven't paid her a dime for 14 years. That's why I said in my email to you guys, this is like some kind of Jesus meal or something. I'm going to show my love.
It's the book of Job.
For you being mean to me, basically. And they were like, "Oh, what a nice gesture. We'll use our super wealthy money that we couldn't afford to pay you with all these years to do the feast over with all the expensive ingredients." And they send somebody off to Paris to get all the fine cheeses and whatnot. She makes the meal again. They invite all the townspeople over and she gets them all drunk. She gets them all drunk before she even serves a course. So, of course, they're going to love this goddamn meal. And I turned it off. There was maybe 20 minutes left. And I hated it. I hated it. The production values felt like an early 80s TV movie or soap opera. And you go online and it's a haunting story of pain and redemption. And I don't care. I don't care. Babette can... Babette's Feast can go away.
I always wonder why. I mean, I haven't seen Babette's Feast. There's a chance I watch it and go, "God damn it, Jeremy, you're just wrong." Hearing you describe it, it reminded me of, and this movie doesn't have nearly the accolades, but it reminded me of Old Joy, a movie I saw, 14 years ago or so. And it's that director that had the cow movie. The cow movie that you and
I forget Aaron, her name.
Oh, Kelly Reichardt?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's it. Did a movie called Old Joy where it had like stunning 100% Rotten Tomatoes score, like all this just incredible reviews and everything. I went to go watch that motherfucker. I was like, this is so God damn slow and boring and terrible. And I was like, what are people seeing out of this that's so amazing? And it really does. I don't like the idea that there's like this huge contingent of people who love a movie that when you go watch it, you don't see any of the things that they see. Like it does make you wonder if there's something wrong with you when that happens. And there's an added element to you hating a movie where it's like, I don't get what everybody else likes about this. And I don't know. I think sometimes a movie like Babette's Feast, maybe one influencer saw the movie and said, "This is great. I highly recommend it." And then all the other critics that followed suit said, "Yeah, well, we better say it's good too, because
that guy's so respected."
Yeah. So who knows?
Did the food look good?
No.
Like it wasn't even food porn.
It didn't even look very appetizing because it's poor Danish hill country 1400s fucking who knows when food. It's not, if it looked good, it wouldn't be true to the time period.
Even if it did look good, it wouldn't have made the movie good.
No, not for me.
Well, I'll bring us home with a good food movie. It's a movie called Soul Food.
Yeah.
You can tell that we've been watching a lot of food movies as a group. This was 1997. It came out. It was directed by George Tillman and produced by Babyface. If you guys are too young for this, Kenneth Babyface Edmonds was the shit in the 90s when it comes to producers. I'm trying to think of Mike Will made it. You know, any of the Swedish, Dr. Luke, like some of the producers that are legendary. Kenneth Babyface Edmonds was one of these. He's from
he I was think, everything. Like almost every song, it seemed like, that would come out would have his name attached to it.
Exactly. He was either the writer or the performer of the song. Now, this movie is not about music, but there is music in it, and it's awesome. three sisters that have a mother called Big Mama. Irma P. Hall, who was
Irma P. Hall's great.
Lady Killers.
Lady Killers and A Family Thing, if you've ever seen that movie.
Yeah. Several things. She's spectacular. She's the matriarch of the family. And what they do, even though they've got arguments and they've got different lives and everything, the daughters and their significant others, their husbands and everything, they all come to Sunday dinner. And they have Sunday dinner. Big Mama makes it. The sisters help out. It's been a tradition for 40 years. Okay. Now this is set in Chicago, but she brought her recipes up from Mississippi. And so there's creamed corn, there's mac and cheese, there's pinto beans, there's string beans, there's fried chicken, there's ham, there's just all this beautiful, collard greens. There's all this beautiful, beautiful food that they don't shy away from. There's chicken and dumplings. The Reverend always, they come over after church, and the Reverend always comes over because Big Mama makes the best Sunday dinner. And of course the Reverend's all pervy and like macking on all the women and everything. He's just a bumbling old Reverend, you know, I just got to touch some boobies and everything. Oh, hell
no, God,
you know, Jesus, Jesus saves and everything. You know, after there's a health issue that puts Big Mama in the hospital, and her grandson, played by Brandon Hammond, beautiful performance by him. He's trying to keep the family together, and family starts fragmenting and everything. The three sisters are played by Vanessa L. Williams, who used to have a pop career too, and she was also Miss America for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Another daughter played by Vivica A. Fox, and Nia Long is the youngest daughter. She is just got married to Mekhi Phifer, who's also excellent in this movie. So all the performances are fantastic, but. It's about family. It's about how food, and they actually explicate this in the movie, how food brings everyone together, where you can, even if you're pissed as hell at somebody, you can put that to the side and share a meal with somebody. And that's what Sunday dinner was all about. This is very, very near and dear to my heart because this is how I was raised. Jeremy, I don't know how being a preacher's kid worked for this kind of thing, but my family always after church gathered at my grandparents' house for Sunday dinner. And we would have very similar food to this. My grandmother was an excellent cook, as was all of her sisters. And I was an excellent eater. And I would eat and eat and eat. It's the type of food that you not only want to eat, you want to eat a ton of. Mm-hmm. Cornbread, you know, all this stuff. And it very much... Between the scene of, we shouldn't even talk about it right now. Between the scenes with the grandmother and the grandson, it gets extremely emotional for me.
Oh.
It got very dusty in the room. Mm. It's just a good movie. It's a very, very food forward movie. And food that I'm very familiar with. And it just felt like a big old comfort blanket around me, both from the family aspect and the food aspect. By the way, there's a really foxy woman, Gina Rivera, who was in Showgirls. She played Jesse Spano's friend.
Yeah.
Their first friend. Gina Rivera is so beautiful. And she ends up fucking one of the sister's husbands and stuff. But... Mm-hmm. Mostly it's about the food and the family. But yes, I wanted to throw in Gina Rivera, who is a delight in this movie because she's not only lovely and talented, she's also very beautiful and very sexy in this movie.
Nice. This is a movie that has eluded me over the years, and I need to watch it for sure. This had good reviews when it came out. It's something that's going to be on my list. I'm going to definitely watch
this. I think you guys would absolutely dig it.
What is it, Jeremy? What did you guys do after church? Did you guys have like a set? You haven't seen Righteous Gemstone, but they go out for Sunday lunch after church lunch at a restaurant.
I mean, it was always one of three things. We were either hosting somebody from church in our home for a meal, or we were being hosted in somebody's from church's home for their meal. The big thing to invite the pastor and his family over for Sunday lunch, or we were having a potluck at church.
But oh yeah, yeah.
What
yeah.
I remember is that, and this is bitter, is that I wasn't out of character until after Sunday lunch.
Sure, you had to behave just like
yeah,
you did at church, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think this is ultimately a truncated podcast. I think it's going to end up being about an hour and a half, but that's fine. We've talked so much. We did the 2-hour one the other day that got completely ruined. So yeah, sorry about that. For those who usually see, you know, hear the 2-hour versions. We're done. We're spent.
Like a cheap hooker.
Yes, Barrett with always making it worse.
Did I tell you that story about how I went in when we first moved to Chicago? It was like 100 degrees in June in Chicago, and I had to go into a meeting with the faculty to introduce our program, and like the head of psychiatry, the chair of psychiatry is in there, and like all the staff, all the attendings and everything. And I was so hot, dude. It was so hot out there, and I'm in the business suit and everything. So I walk in, and Will Cronenwed, the attending chief of medicine, introduced me, and I was like, "Sorry, guys, I'm sweating like a whore in church here."
Right. Nice.
And nobody laughed at all. Yeah, I was like, "That's nobody a great icebreaker. Come on."
Yeah. Okay, well, that's going to do it for this week. Keep going to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. We're on SoundCloud. We're on Discord. If you want to get on Discord, you can go to our Reddit page and find a link on the right side of the page there, or you can go to the Facebook page and private message me there. That's going to do it for this week. It's Chris Atkinson, Jeremy Scott, and Barrett Scherer. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
Hey, Jeremy, do you really like that Marlowe 2 record?
Yeah, baby.
Isn't it awesome?
Yeah, have you but heard that's it, Chris? Specifically.
I haven't heard one bit of it because the last 3 weeks have been wall-to-wall fucking sin scripts. So
yeah, no kidding.
I haven't had. I'm finally seeing some fucking brightness in the next few days. So I will be able to look that up and maybe possibly listen to it or maybe even buy the album.
Future Power Sources rules my ass.
Yeah, that's the best one. He's got those three different flows where he's like, ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba, ba-da-ba-da-ba, and then he breaks in, ha-how, ha-how, ha-da-ba-da-ba-fow, ha-da-ba-da-ba-fow, and then he kicks into, I used to be ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da
Let's be done. Let's not do anymore.
Is that okay? Giving me shit, Kurt?
Jeremy's mouth has been through a lot today.
You don't know what that happened.
I know.
As long as we don't go the full 2 hours, I mean, my jaw's a little sore. My jaw's a little sore. Unfortunately, Chris didn't hear that, even though it was an accident.
Nice. Nice. So you got a deep clean on those fuckers.
I heard
huh?
Jeremy say I didn't hear that, and I definitely did not hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a deep clean. So they went in, like, you can even see one half of my bottom teeth is really clean.
Oh, yeah.
And the other half is dirty because they only wanted to numb my face one half at a time. So I got to go back in November for the other deep clean.
Jesus Christ, dude.
I can't feel my face when
Seriously,
I'm with you.
I've been telling everybody I know, take good care of your teeth. This is like driving me crazy.
I had
back there for shit.
I had a thing a few years ago where they just blasted them white, basically. They just it was like Dumb and Dumber where they were like, you know, shaving their toenails off or whatever. They had
just, that's a grinder.
Yeah. But I remember after it was done, I went to a lunch or something, and I'm sitting there talking, and my mom, who doesn't want to just immediately address it to me, says to somebody like my brother or something, it's like, I think Chris's teeth look really white. Like, just fucking ask me.
It's like a stage whisper.
Yeah.
I think they look pretty white. You guys ever seen tentacle porn?
I have.
No.
I haven't. I did real quick. We went to there's a grocery store in Chicago, a Japanese grocery store, and it's like a supermarket, like a big mega market for the Japanese. And my friend Masa was like, hey, come over here. Here's where they keep the manga and the books and all that stuff. And I was like, cool, man. That's really interesting. And he was like, and here's the porno. And, and like I went over and I opened it up and there's this fucking octopus like fisting a woman in the butt. And I was like, oh, this is like in an adult library. And he's like, no, the kids section is right there.
Oh no.
Robert Pattinson has tested positive for COVID.
Oh damn. Mm-hmm. I saw that The Rock did.
The Rock and his entire family. But I saw earlier today the Batman shut down production because of a single COVID test, and it turns out it's fucking Batman who tested positive.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, there's your problem right there.
Yeah.
if you get the Batman as the positive test, that's your problem.
Yeah. Probably a good idea to shut down production if your Batman has COVID.
You're going to want to shut this down for a while.
They should have put it
under control.
They should have put it as part of the plot, is what they should have done.
He's beating people down. He's like,
yes, having trouble breathing. And then Scarecrow comes in with his like pixie dust or whatever. It's like even worse.
You have COVID.
Yeah.
God. It's totally what he sounds like.
It's exactly what he sounds like.
She and Mekhi Phifer get it on.
It's no Mekhi Phifer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
back in the day, Mekhi Phifer and Taye Diggs were just tearing it up, man.
Yeah, they were.
Can you imagine what it was like to be them in the 90s? Oh, my God.
Was it Taye that got Stella her groove back?
Yeah, Taye was in How Stella Got Her.
I think there were several people that got her groove back. But, yeah.
But
yeah,
Taye was the main one, right?
Yeah, that was Angela Bassett, yeah.
Hey, you know what I've become a master at? Yeah. Is Reuben sandwiches.
Oh.
Yes. You get the corned beef, you get it sliced fresh. Oh. My mom actually makes canned sauerkraut.
I hate sauerkraut, but I bet it's good for you.
I understand. And you put a little melty cheese on there. You broil that thing. You toast your bread only on one side, the inside.
Yeah, yeah.
And where you get the soft on the outside, the crispy on the inside.
Okay.
And it is beautiful.
Well, they have the sandwich here, but there doesn't seem to be any Reubens.
Ew, there you go. Quiz show in the house.
That's right.
Nice.
Do you think something like sauerkraut, Jeremy, is something that you hated before and you have poo-pooed it since, but maybe if you ate it now and it was prepared the correct way, you would be like all about it? Or have you eaten sauerkraut recently?
No, it's entirely possible. I haven't had sauerkraut probably since I was a teenager in college, and I'm sure even then it was on accident. So it is something that I probably should revisit, to be fair, because back then I wouldn't have liked cabbage, but I eat cabbage now. I didn't like coleslaw, and I'll tell you what, I'll eat coleslaw, but I gotta salt and pepper the shit out of it, because every coleslaw I find here in Tennessee is sweet as hell, like it's some kind of dessert.
Yeah,
and I'm looking at cabbage and carrots and like, how is this so fucking sweet?
Yeah,
but I will eat it. So
you may be right. Slaw.
Yeah, sauerkraut's one of those things that I would not eat. But like you know, like now that I've had it on sandwiches, like the Reuben and all that, that's I feel it's good. It's good stuff. It's a good compliment to that sandwich.
Yeah, man, I got funky tastes. I like the funk. I watched Hard Knocks the other day.
Yeah,
the new one, and I was like, hey, this is something I enjoy. You know, I forget how much I like Hard Knocks until I watch an episode of Hard Knocks. Mm-hmm. And they were going through stuff, and I was like, oh, it's cool. It's the guy that's on the bubble of being cut, and then it's the guy that's doing really well. It's the guy that's holding out for the new contract and all that. It's the coach cursing every other word and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, I was like, nobody outside of this, outside of the stadium, is wearing a mask, and nobody inside the stadium is really wearing a mask. If they are wearing a mask, they're pulling it down to talk,
mm-hmm.
which is the dumbest goddamn thing that you can ever do in human history. And so it started giving me anxiety. I had to turn it off, man. I'm like, God, like they're out, and like one guy's in like a recording studio. He's like, music has always been my life. And he's in there like recording without a mask and like hanging out with his friends. And then he's going back in the locker room, just like breathing on his buddies.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you have people like Kirk Cousins, who's like, well, if I die, I die. I went to a gas station the other day, and, you know, some rando walks out of the Tiger Market or whatever, just not wearing a mask, sipping on his drink. And I was like, is he one of those guys? Like I don't want to judge the reason why they're not wearing a mask, because there's a variety of reasons why people don't wear masks. The one reason is, oh, I don't believe in any of the thing that's going on. The second reason is, do you think there's people out there who don't wear a mask because they still think it's about protecting themselves?
Yes.
When they put a mask, because they don't care. So they're like, well, if I get it, I get it.
Yes.
And they don't wear the mask because they still think it's because it, you know, it's protecting them and not other people. And mm-hmm. I saw the dude walking out, and you can read anything you want to on a dude's face when he's walking out of a gas station. But it looked like he had this defiant look on his face as I approached the sliding door and everything. Like, here comes somebody with a mask, you know, hope I don't get it. Hope I don't have to have a discussion with this guy, blah, blah, you know. But it just looked like I just read a million things that probably aren't even in that dude's head, but. I was sitting there thinking, is it because he thinks that it's to protect, he thinks masks are to protect himself, so he's just going to take the consequences, whatever. He doesn't, it's not about, like, I think that's the original message that got fucked up about COVID, right?
Yep.
That was the original thing. Nobody straight up and straight up just said, you know, hey, the mask is for protecting others. It's not to protect you at all. And nobody said that right up at the top. And so there's been a confusion about why you wear the mask since.
I agree. Taint right. It's like, what is the knockoff Mr. Skin site in Knocked Up?
I can't remember.
Where she's like, oh, Bush, yeah. Bush, it's 16 minutes, Bush.
Boots and Bush. And it's like, oh, like Mr. Skin. What? Like Mr. Skin. This is exactly the website we're trying to come up with.
Yeah, I know. They go back
flesh,
and search.
It's Flesh of the Star.
Flesh of the Star.
That's right.
They go back.
You
want to
find where your favorite star is in the nude.
He mentioned that when he wrote when he collaborated with the graphic novel guy, he was like, they invited us over to their home in Brussels. And I was like, man, how close is Brussels to Paris? Is it like going from here to Bowling Green or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked it up; it's like 5 hours away.
No, yeah.
So it's not just, you know, neighbor.
But what's really cool? I've been talking to this guy who basically lives in Germany, and he always talks about how he gets on the train and goes to this place, and it's like, oh, so you just get on the train, huh? And just go there. Yeah. It's pretty awful.
I was actually looking up because it seems like London and Paris are like Gotham City and Metropolis and Batman v Superman.
It's patterned after.
But that's also 5 hours away unless you take the Eurostar train, and then it's like 2 hours.
Yeah,
you
just go and when there. I went out there 25 years ago, we took a ferry, and it was like an hour or two, something like that.
So. That's badass. Well, I mean, we were gone from Paris to the Riviera, it only took like 3 hours to get from north of France all the way down to the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going like, I think, around 250 miles an hour or so on that train.
Mm-hmm.
It was It was badass.
I bet. It was pre-Chunnel, though. Chunnel came in maybe a year or two after that.
That was my favorite fake Seinfeld movie, was Chunnel.
You have selected Agent Zero.
It was that and Prognosis Negative.
Yeah, Prognosis Negative. This is very observant of you, Barrett, to notice the taking the piss part of the movie.
Are you having a laugh?
Yes. Which is the thing in Extras that that Ricky Gervais always says on his hit TV show. Are you having a laugh? Catchphrase.
One of these days I'll learn how to conversate, right?
Yeah.
And
God. See, you're gonna start saying that. You're gonna say that not a word enough, and you're gonna start saying it for real after a while.
Conversate. I'm gonna say, are you having a laugh?
Yeah, exactly. You having a laugh?
Oh, I kind of wanted to spice this one up for some reason. I was like, you know,
yeah,
what?
it's because we've got New Day energy. That's why.
That's true. Oh. It's a Friday, bitch.
They've been fucking my shit up. Fuck my shit up right now.
Yeah.
Oh, baby.
She's super sexy in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dirty but sexy.
Well, yeah, it makes it sexier.
Yeah,
disgusting.
I'm trying to remember because she was in Hitman, wasn't she? The Timothy Oliphant.
She was in the Marky Mark video game.
Max Payne.
Max Payne.
Those are identical movies to me.
But that's the funny thing about Mila Kunis is that Mila Kunis has never really played sexy. She's as hot as it can be, but like she rarely ever played like the vamp or anything like that. So
yeah. Forgetting Sarah Marshall might be in the running.
The girl next door type on that in that.
Oh, when they're hiking up the mountain.
Yeah.
And he's like,
"Your vagina showing."
I didn't realize you could sweat this much.
I can see your hoo ha.
Just spring like a frog off the cliff.